This is the end of history.
A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies.
We believe that peace is at hand.
An axis of evil arming to threaten the peace of the world.
Okay, I want to start off today's episode. It's going to be a little bit different than normal. I want to play, this is just the audio of a movie trailer from the 1990s when I was, I'm guessing a teenager, young adult, somewhere around there. But this is the story. It's a Tom Clancy movie or Tom Clancy book that was turned into a movie called Clear and Present Danger. And this is an example of where our reality is even crazier than what fiction once was. And so I'm just going to let it kind of speak for itself. This is the story of Jack Ryan, you know, the famous Tom Clancy character. He's confronting, well, the famous scene is where he's confronting the President of the United States because the President of the United States is starting a war in Latin America, and he's using the drug trade, the drug wars, as cover for that war. So let me just play this, just give you something to think about.
Some say the greatest threat to America.
These drug cartels represent a clear and present danger to the national security of the United States.
Comes from other nations. Some say the greatest threat to America.
The course of action I'd suggest is a course of action I can't suggest.
Comes from within.
We are 2 minutes to target. Looks like we've got our own little war.
Harrison Ford is Jack Ryan.
I'm appointing Ryan the acting deputy director, intelligence.
The finding clearly states that our assistance is limited to supply and advice only.
He doesn't know about it, Bobby.
No troops, then.
No troops.
He needs to know nothing. He's gonna know nothing.
The laws he swore to uphold are at risk.
The explosion here rocked the ranch of Enrique Rojas less than an hour ago.
You said it was going to be a surgical strike. That's a kid they just brought out on NBC.
Why was I left out of it?
You see everything in black and white.
Not black and white. Right and wrong.
The honor he is determined to defend is at stake.
I'm afraid if I dig any deeper, no one's going to like what I find.
Well, know about politics in Washington? I can explain it in 4 words. Watch your back, Jack.
He's coming to you with no security. Once Ryan's gone, we're back online.
Based on the number one best-selling novel.
There are troops, Jack. I didn't know that. You know I didn't know that.
Harrison Ford.
You went before Congress, and you got the money for it. You went before Congress, and you lied.
I never lied to Congress.
You lied.
Willem Dafoe.
I'm on a plane. I'm going to kill him.
Anne Archer.
Are you going away again?
Be careful.
And James Earl Jones.
You took an oath.
You gave your word to the people of the United States.
Who authorized this?
I think it's time the whole thing went away.
Then it should go away.
I will not let you dishonor their memories by telling me you had nothing to do with it.
How dare you come into this office and bark at me like some little junkyard dog? I am the President of the United States.
How dare you, sir?
Paramount Pictures presents this summer's most electrifying motion picture, Clear and Present Danger.
As I was researching for this series, for this episode that we're beginning today, I had forgotten all about that movie. And then it just dawned on me that was out there, and we're just living in weird times. And if you don't know what I'm referring to here, if you don't know what I'm referring to with that, how that trailer is relevant in this day and age, I get it. You know, government shutdowns, political assassinations. We've got troops being deployed to U.S. cities, wars in the Middle East, Sudan, Ukraine. Amid all the craziness taking shape in the world today, you could be forgiven if you missed a very troubling situation developing in the Caribbean Sea over the last couple of months. And it's probably one that you need to be paying very close attention to. Very close attention. Something unprecedented is happening in the waters off the coast of Venezuela. Since the first week of September 2025, at the time that I'm recording this podcast episode, at least 57 people have been killed by the U.S. military, literally bombed out of the water. This isn't like a secret. This isn't hidden. The Trump administration, the Department of War, as we now call it, are bragging about it. On a growing number of different occasions, President Trump has proudly taken credit for using the military to launch attacks on these lightly manned boats coming out of the country of Venezuela. And every day that goes by, in fact, in the last few weeks, it seems like that number is getting higher and higher. I had to get this episode out just, and I had to go and check what's the number up to now, because it just keeps climbing. One Trump fanboy, a guy disguised as a Fox News reporter, he described these attacks as something from the Bad Boys movies. And that is, in fact, what they look like, these videos that are being released. You've got, like, fast boats skimming across the ocean waters and then exploding into flames as U.S. strikes rain down on them. The U.S. Department of War, again, that's what President Trump recently renamed the Defense Department. The Department of War has been distributing these videos like some kind of promo sizzle reel. Now, there are a lot of problems with this whole thing. The first is the why behind all of this. It's not totally clear why the U.S. is doing this, or for that matter, if it's even legal that they're doing this. I can guarantee you that if Venezuela were doing this to U.S. boats, it would be considered it would not be considered legal. But that's not really the point, right? And not in a world where international politics is defined by power. To understand the why and what this is all about, we need to examine a series of moves that have transpired over the last few months. Now, first, President Trump and his administration, they designated a list of known drug cartels and organizations as foreign terrorist organizations. Now, that's not a huge problem in my eyes. Not really. A lot of these groups do behave like terrorist organizations, even if they aren't doing it on American soil. I'm sure we've all heard stories of the violence just south of the American-Mexican border in places like Juarez and elsewhere. Labeling these groups as foreign terrorist organizations, what that does for U.S. policy, for U.S. law, it means the rule of law doesn't really apply to these groups anymore. Because the U.S. is now in a war against terrorism for the last, you know, nearly 25 years. Then we put these guys on that list, and they're included within that war on terror. So they can be arrested. You know, the people who are accused of being a part of these drug cartels or these drug gangs that are on this list, they can be arrested without due process. They can be held without trial. They can be killed. And it's not murder, not under the law, right? As far as the U.S. is concerned. Now, are these drug cartels the same things as ISIS or Al-Qaeda? Probably not. I guess definitely not is a better answer. These are gangs. They're not non-state actors driven by political ideologies. But still, I get it, okay? And I don't have a huge problem with that. Granted, there is the potential for big problems down the road when we give the government a blank check to do whatever they want to whomever they want, whenever they want. That problem was created, you know, almost a quarter century ago. That problem exists regarding any group on this foreign terrorist list, not just groups from Venezuela. But that brings us to the next step that was taken. As of February, the Trump administration added 8 Latin American drug cartels to the foreign terrorist list maintained by the United States. Now, under the old rules designed during the Bush years, that means these guys are free game when it comes to the U.S. laws of war. In late September, certain members of Congress received a message from President Trump explaining that he had determined, that's a key word right there, determined, not declared, that the U.S. is in a formal armed conflict with these drug gangs. Now, that's his justification for the strikes on these boats off the waters of Venezuela. And I think it's important to also point out that the 3 of these strikes had already taken place by the point that, you know, the rest of these took place after that memo. But when that memo first went to Congress, 3 of these strikes had actually already taken place. And the Trump administration is pointing out after the fact, these were acts of war, not murder, mind you. These were acts of war as far as the Trump administration is concerned. Okay, kind of makes sense, except for a few key facts. Facts tend to get in the way of a lot of what's going on in politics these days. And the fact is, Venezuela is not a big player in the drug war. Colombia? Sure. Mexico? Definitely. But Venezuela is not. Venezuela's major export has never been drugs. But in recent decades, as most of you probably know, it was oil. You've heard of the Colombian cartel, right? Cocaine and drugs like that comes from the Colombian cartel. The big fentanyl epidemic, right? That's been the scourge of America for the last decade. It didn't come from Venezuela. It came from Mexico. Now, facts like these are really inconvenient for a lot of the Trump administration's plans and policies. They're using words like terrorism and drug wars, similar to how American politicians in former decades used words like communism in the old days. In the era of the Cold War, the enemy of communism was used to justify all sorts of actions across the world. A lot of the time, those actions violated international law, American policies, even American values, and sometimes even just plain old common sense. And a lot of the time, the thing being described as communism wasn't even communism. Think of the coup in Iran in 1953 as an example. Just because the American intelligence service said it was a communist threat didn't mean it really was. Even if that meant the U.S. took extraordinary measures over there that really came back to bite us in the end. President Bush, George W. Bush, he did this with the word terrorism, as we've talked about. And now the Trump administration seems to be applying this same logic today with the word drug wars. Earlier this spring, President Trump slapped sanctions on Canada, saying it was a punishment for Canada's role in letting fentanyl across their borders into America. But again, the facts. The problem is that it wasn't happening. A whopping 0.02% of fentanyl that was illegally crossing over U.S. borders was coming in through Canada. President Trump was using the word to justify his actions, but the facts weren't there. It wasn't true. Now, it seems to be the same thing that's going on in Venezuela right now. Venezuela is not a big player in the drug war. Granted, the drug suppliers out of Colombia often use Venezuela to transport their drugs through there. I guess you could see it from that perspective, but that's not what the Trump administration is describing or even what they're saying. They're saying that Venezuela is pushing illegal drugs across U.S. borders. President Trump has said, in fact, that each boat he takes out is saving 25,000 American lives.
Well, I don't want to tell you exactly, but we are certainly looking at land now because we've got the sea very well under control. We've had a couple of days where there isn't a boat to be found. And that I view that as a good thing, not a bad thing. But we had tremendous amounts coming in by boats, by very expensive boats. You know, they have a lot of money, very fast, very expensive boats that were pretty big. And the way you look at it is every boat that we knock out, we save 25,000 American lives. So every time you see a boat and you feel badly, you say, wow, that's rough. It is rough. But if you lose three people and save 25,000 people, these are people that are killing our population. Every boat is saving 25,000 lives. And you can see it. The boats get hit and you see that fentanyl all over the ocean. It's like floating in bags. It's all over the place. And it's a tremendous save. We're saving tremendous amounts of lives.
Now, that last bit there about seeing fentanyl all over the ocean when these boats are bombed, no surprise, but that's not true. In fact, I guess I should kind of pause right here real quick and just add that there's been zero proof provided by the Department of War or anyone else in the Trump administration that there are even any drugs on these boats. We're just taking them at their word. And that seems a bit problematic to me. The Secretary of War, Hegseth, he recently wrote, this is what I think he tweeted out. He said, our intelligence, without a doubt, confirmed that this vessel was trafficking narcotics. This is after one of these boats being blown up. This vessel was trafficking narcotics. The people on board were narco-terrorists, and they were operating on a known narco-trafficking transit route. These strikes will continue until the attacks on the American people are over, 4 exclamation points. Anyway, zero proof of any drugs even being there. And yet, 25,000 American lives are saved with every boat being hit. The president added that since all these American lives are being saved, Americans should actually see this as an act of kindness. Now, it may be easier to do that when it's not your friends, not your family members being killed without any proof of wrongdoing being offered. And by the way, even if the rationale for striking these boats was that the Colombian drug cartels are using Venezuela as a route for transport, that still doesn't make any sense. Just as much, if not more, is smuggled and transported through Mexico and Central American countries. Why are they not being targeted in the same way? Why isn't the Trump administration dealing directly with the problem in Colombia rather than waiting for it to hit Venezuela? Think of all the lives the president could save there. But that's the thing. Behind all the words, behind the bombast, is the reality that these strikes off the waters of Venezuela are not really about drugs at all. As we dig into this topic, you're going to find these words to be very literal. This is not about drugs at all. It's not about terrorism, narco-terrorism, or anything like this. It's about power. It's about politics. It's about a president who holds personal grudges. And it's about a situation that will likely get a lot more dangerous and disastrous in the coming months. This is about President Trump and his advisors targeting Venezuela. I'm not saying that Venezuela's government is not worthy of being targeted, but I think we should know and pay attention to what's really going on rather than the illusions being thrown up, particularly as we can expect it to get a lot worse in the coming months. Let me lay out a few facts to support this idea that the Trump administration is actively targeting Venezuela and the Maduro government. He's the president of Venezuela. You may have never heard of Richard Grenell. Prior to the first Trump administration, he was a public relations consultant for several different political figures. In the first Trump administration, Grenell became a U.S. ambassador to Germany. His little claim to fame at the time was to become the highest-ranking openly gay U.S. ambassador. He wasn't very popular in the role, and I don't guess I would expect him to be, as he represented an administration that was at least speaking publicly about wanting to get rid of NATO. German profiles of the new ambassador at the time, they described him as vain, as narcissistic. He held a couple of other roles near the end of the first Trump administration, including acting director of the National Intelligence, then pressed into the hard right news media outlets during the Biden years. Well, when President Trump returned to office this year in 2025, Grenell was appointed as a presidential envoy for special missions. Now, one of those special missions was Venezuela and the Maduro administration. Maduro, like I said, he's the president of Venezuela. Maduro himself has described Grenell as his top channel for communications to the Trump White House. Grenell has worked to get prisoners released in Venezuela. He's communicated the return of refugees who have been deported by the Trump administration's anti-immigration policies. He's also been a top figure in finding a way to convince Nicolas Maduro of resigning from power. That was one of his objectives. Now, a lot of people forget that in the first Trump administration, the president actively supported Juan Guaido, an opposition candidate to Nicolas Maduro. The U.S. and other countries even recognizes Guaido as the officially elected new president of Venezuela at that time. They got other countries to do the same. The only problem was Maduro wouldn't recognize it. Maduro is one of those crazy leaders who refuses to recognize the actual voter results in an election. Maduro refused to back down, refused to surrender power, and Guaido had to eventually flee the country. He lives in Miami now. Well, Grenell was pushing for a peaceful transition of Maduro out of power. And there were these boats bombing on the one hand, and then there were these diplomatic efforts by Grenell on the other. It's the old carrot and stick approach, right? Until it wasn't, I guess. At the beginning of October, President Trump literally instructed Grenell, his special ambassador, to cut off all diplomatic efforts with Maduro and Venezuela. The carrot approach is officially over. In September, Nicolas Maduro even sent a 3-page letter directly to President Trump asking for talks to work out an agreement between their two nations. This is what the New York Times wrote about it. They wrote, "This month, Mr. Maduro sent a 3-page letter to Mr. Trump insisting that his country did not export drugs. The letter, dated September 6th, called for talks to ease the tensions. Multiple people briefed on its content told the New York Times. The letter had remained undisclosed until September 21st, when Ms. Rodriguez posted it online and said it had been delivered to Washington through an intermediary. Caroline Leavitt, the White House spokeswoman, said last week that the administration received the letter but had dismissed it." In other words, they didn't even read it. Now think about that for a moment. The president, this president, who has invited Vladimir Putin to a summit in Alaska, who invites Benjamin Netanyahu to speak to Congress, and even had meetings with the leader of North Korea, he won't meet with the president of Venezuela. Now that seems a bit off, doesn't it? And if it does seem off, well, it probably should. Increasingly, the actions of the Trump administration seem to be much more tilted toward regime change in Venezuela rather than peace or progress of any kind. In August, the U.S. Navy began to moving all sorts of firepower toward the Caribbean Sea. This included surveillance planes, 8 warships, around 10,000 troops. The State Department has announced a reward of $50 million for anything that leads to the arrest and conviction of Nicolas Maduro. Now, read that as an offer for a coup being made to Maduro's leading generals. That's what a bounty like that means. In the last week, the War Department moved an aircraft carrier into the region, along with more warships and more attack planes. A U.S. B-1 bomber even flew near Venezuelan airspace last week. This is all going somewhere. But my personal suspicion is that we will never arrive at the intended ends. President Trump is a leader who likes to put on a show. He talks about the art of the deal, and even while he usually fails to make many deals, his ability to broadcast distractions keeps the audience off balance. And I suspect as the results of his tariff policies, various disruptive economic policies begin to take effect, and that's starting to happen now, Venezuela will become a handy piece of theater to shift America's national attention by our reality star commander-in-chief. But that doesn't mean that things can't move beyond his control, right? There are a lot of people in the U.S. government, even in Trump's own cabinet, who would love to see regime change in Venezuela. That doesn't mean Maduro is a victim or a good guy, all right? I'm not saying that at all. There's a lot more to this story. And I think we need to understand the background in order to better grasp what's really happening in the coming days, weeks, and months. Because currently, it looks like we're heading towards war. That's what it looks like is happening right now in Venezuela, okay? That's what it looks like what's happening right now with all of these forces from the U.S. Navy lining up in the Caribbean Sea. So for the next few episodes available only to our Patreon subscribers, by the way, but we're going to be digging into the background of Venezuela, its rise, its fall, and its current predicaments. We'll look at the history of the country. We're going to look at different U.S. policies that got us here, as well as the corruption and the incompetence of the Maduro years there. This is a nation that should be loaded with oil wealth, with prosperity, and somehow it's teetering on the brink of failed state status. Well, how did that happen? Well, that's what we're going to find out. And we'll start with our next episode that looks at the beginning of Venezuela and its history. And that episode will be available to you in the coming days here at the End of History. Remember, if you're not a Patreon subscriber, you can sign up for as little as $1 a month at theendofhistory.net. You can go and do that today. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The End of History with J.B. Shreve. Check out more episodes at iTunes and wherever you download quality podcasts. Join us online at theendofhistory.net for articles and essays from the end of history. Follow JB on Twitter at JB_Shreve. The End of History is produced by Windmill Media.